Welcome to Indie Radio Garden. This week's highlights are from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
From 92.9 FM, WGGT LP G-Town Radio, we have the show Germantown Info Hub. Malika Fruin interviews Lynette Medley. They chat about the spot menstrual hub and how society must break myths about taboos to normalize talking about menstruation.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Germantown Info Hub Radio Hour. My name is Malika Fruin, and I'm the community organizer here. I live in Germantown with my partner and children. Tonight, we speak with Lynette Medley about a taboo. She is co-founder of the Spot Menstrual Hub and wants no more secrets. Lynette Medley is a sexuality awareness educator and counselor. She and her daughter, Naya McLone, are on a mission to end period poverty and destigmatize menstruation. When they first started this work, they delivered sanitary items at night to keep things private. Last month, they opened the Spot, period, billed as the nation's first menstrual hub right here in Germantown. Welcome, Lynette.
Hello. Welcome. So glad to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Well, let's get straight to it. What is period poverty and who does it affect?
So period poverty is the inability to purchase or have access to feminine products or period care items due to economic difficulties, and also the lack of resources around waste management services to address menstrual health and wellness. And it affects people who are basically marginalized or vulnerable, who really have inadequate access to economic services to be able to purchase them.
So you've been delivering menstrual products throughout the city through your nonprofit, No More Secrets, Mind, Body, Spirit Incorporated. And you've been doing this for years.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is our 6th year. We're going on our 6-year anniversary from doing this work. Yes.
So what were the community's needs that compelled you to expand it into a physical hub?
Well, I think the pandemic just really uncovered the differences in the haves and the have-nots and really exposed the disparities in our communities. You know, even from deliveries, when we first started doing deliveries, we were doing between 50 to 80 a week. When the pandemic hit, it was just an overwhelming amount. We ended up doing about 250 to 275 deliveries a week. And from that, from those interactions is what really unfolded the multidisciplinary issues that were affecting marginalized communities. So we'll be on a corner, maybe 52nd Street, Kensington, any area that's, impoverished in our city. And we're trying to link them to other services as well, or provide access to running water or a functional toilet for them to be able to deal with it, because everything was shut down. You know, our city, we always had issues with, poverty, but we had other centers that people could go to, from schools to community centers to churches. And when all of that shut down, it really was like, wow, this really shows how people who live in poverty or people who are suffering from economic hardships do not have these things in their community.
There was a blatant need and you saw it.
Definitely.
Well, let's talk about the basics for the menstrual hub. When does it actually open?
It actually opened on February 20th. So the hub is fully functional and is opening. It's opened Monday, Wednesday, Friday are our normal hours to actually be at the hub. But we still ask people to go through our website or, set up an appointment just because of COVID precautions, and to just make sure that we can basically provide the services that we need to our communities. And we still do facilitate delivery. So that's one thing. So some days it's an emergency or a crisis, because we have people who are bedridden. We have people who are disabled. We have people with mental challenges. Like the other day we were doing our delivery with a family who is deaf, and we knew that they wouldn't be able to come. We have blind families. So we still are out in the community, because again, marginalized communities are impacted by multiple layers of deficits. So that's why we still do both parts.
Yeah, I was just reading the other day that one thing that people don't think about are the needs for even diapers, that diapers are such an extreme need for people in poverty because it's not covered under different services and assistance.
And that's the same thing with feminine care products. They're not covered by Medicaid, Medicare, WIC, SNAP. And I think initially when we first started this work, you know, we created the bank that we had in Mount Area, and that was the only feminine bank of its kind in the tri-state area. So then when we started doing the delivery service, and we're intentional about delivering directly to the homes or giving it directly to people affected by poverty. Many people who do this type of work give to like homeless shelters or facilities, and not everybody in poverty is connected to a system. And I think people need to understand that we need to give directly to individuals, because being able to access systems isn't always, you know, a luxury that they have. You know, they need Wi-Fi, they need computers, they need all of these other things. So that's why the hub we wanted to create, you know, we have a computer center here. We have a relaxation center. We have all that within the hub, because things that people take for granted are not always something that people have access to in our community.
True. And I know people have been asking you, how did you actually create this?
Through prayer, God. It's amazing because when you really think about it, it wasn't as if me and Naya had this huge business plan. Again, we were out in the community in our car, you know, really doing intakes, really doing conversations with people, because again, you would come out for one issue around period poverty. And when we're asking them what type of pads do they need and how heavy are they bleeding? And then when the last time they, you know, been checked out, when we found out they're clotting or they're bleeding heavily or they're doing this, I'm like, oh, well, you need a medical exam. Oh, I don't have insurance, or I haven't been to a physician, or, you know, all these other underlying issues are going on. So we're doing referrals for people, you know, even about housing. Well, I have a big hole in my wall and this is going on and I don't have. So it's all of these other things. And remember, everything went virtual, and we're in communities that don't have access to Wi-Fi and computers all the time. Mm-hmm. So how are they getting this? So that's where it all came from. And again, bathroom access, where when people would say, you know, I didn't have my water wasn't running, I could say, well, you can go around here to use the bathroom, or you can do this. That wasn't available anymore. So that's where the hub came from. It was really the voices and experiences of the most marginalized, vulnerable communities in Philadelphia and surrounding areas saying, hey, we need more. And then that's where the idea of the hub came from.
There was still such a need for direct outreach and direct resources that weren't virtual.
Definitely. And it's still happening today. I think that's one of the things that we are intentional about. And I think the relationship that we've built with the community over 6 years. So I would say to anybody, no, I don't think anybody can just jump up and create a hub and think it's going to be effective for your community, because you don't have that relationship. You're not going to get those communities to come out. But I've built this relationship for 6 years. So they trust me. Their community trusts me. I've been in their homes. I've been in their most vulnerable state. So they understand. So they will say, well, Lynette is someone we can trust, and that's where we can go. So, of course, we're doing distribution, we're doing donations, but we're also doing education and awareness and everything else that people don't have around uterine care, around menstrual care. You know, we're always talking about this high level of Black and brown and disabled persons dealing with endometriosis and PCOS and fibroids. Well, how do you expect our population to understand those that we haven't even talked about a normal, healthy period? Because when it happens, the whole world has denied them everything that they need, you know, so you're denying them, and then you expect them to come to you when something goes wrong. That's not going to happen. So we're trying to really introduce these conversations at the onset when people are actually getting their menstrual cycle and just being there to help them live in dignity.
So important. So what can women go to the spot for? I know you've been mentioning it. So the different services, a safe space. What are some of the things that people can go to the spot for?
Definitely. So one of the main things is, of course, access to pre-feminine care products, toiletries. We do have a computer center here where people can use our Wi-Fi and search for other resources, may it be, you know, housing resources, healthcare resources, or doctor's appointments, anything like that. We also have, you know, therapy office. Of course, I am a, you know, counselor and therapist. You know, my specialty is around sexuality related issues, but also self-esteem, self-efficacy, anything from consent to, you know, menstrual care. We also have Naya, who actually is master's in the science, but she does work around empowering young people around self-esteem and engaging in conversations around if they want to go into fields around science, technology, or education. We also have a reentry office in our reentry supports office in our hub under Goldenrod Community. So they meet people up State Road, they give them resources, and they can also get extended resources at the hub. And we have the Breonna Taylor Safe Room, which was financed by Diva Care International through a sponsorship. And they are one of our partnering organizations. We get free menstrual cups delivered to us monthly. And we also have this safe space where we have two futons. We have a TV. And just that's a place where we have community conversations. Actually, we're having our first community conversation on April 8th, where we're having Dr. Stacy and myself facilitate a conversation about first periods, first menstrual cycles with parents and their children. So that's what it is about. It's a space all around menstrual care, wellness, uterine care, but also self-esteem and self-efficacy.
So community conversations. I love that. Is there going to be other programming as well?
Definitely. It's going to be all types of programming that will, you know, basically provide empowerment for our community. And it's going to be driven by our community. Of course, menstrual health and wellness is going to be one of the topics, and about how to use different products. It's ironic, you know, people are only exposed to certain menstrual products because that's the only thing that everybody has told them about. But there is a plethora of different products, but you can get other populations to use them if no one's talking about them. So we're going to teach people how to use menstrual products. And also we're going to have other things from everything around self-esteem, self-efficacy, body image, anything that has to do with people making safer and more informed decisions in their life.
Mm-hmm. I know that No More Secrets has the tagline, "We save lives by changing minds." Can you tell us more about that? What does that mean?
Definitely. Overall, No More Secrets was brought out of the idea and the understanding that we don't talk about anything related to sexuality issues unless it's really reactive. We are reactionary when it comes to sexuality related after someone gets raped, after someone gets pregnant, after, you know, it's this idea. So we save lives by changing minds, by having a more proactive approach that let's normalize these conversations. And then the more we normalize it and talk about it, then people will actually be able to articulate what's going on before something negative happens. And I think that's what happens. I think everything that we do is more of a harm reduction or risk reduction model, where it's like we can reduce harm by normalizing and destigmatizing these conversations. So that's where No More Secrets basically started. You know, we did a lot of work early on around creating safe spaces for people based on their gender identity or sexual orientation. Then we did a lot of work around consent, bodily autonomy, and using your voice to articulate privacy. And then that's how we came into this space around the period poverty. We fell into this space when we started having conversations with young people telling us that they really could not respect their bodies because they had to engage in high risk behaviors just to be able to get a pad or a tampon.
And how did your daughter connect so strongly to this with and work with you in this?
Well, I think, she was going to school, you know, for her master's degree. And actually, her master's degree is in animal science. Naya is more of a scientist. And when she got out, she just saw the work that I was doing. And she was just really impressed and, you know, really saw that she wanted to, you know, she does more of the analytical part of it, I want to say. I'm the empathetic person and she's the analytical person. So us together. And then, you know, in transparency, that was our experience. There wasn't a name for it back then. You know, Naya is very vocal about her dad and my ex-husband being incarcerated with life without parole and our experiences of going from a middle-class family to poverty, like in overnight, and really, you know, dealing with systems and, you know, institutions and different things like that, and really trying to find resources. And I think that when this came up from young people, it was like, it was a repressed idea within me that, hey, this sounds familiar, but they didn't have a name for it and we didn't talk about it. So I think that's why me and Naya were so intentional on making a difference, because we understand that people don't choose to be in poverty. People don't choose to not have access to the basic necessities of life. So we wanted to not treat it as pity, but actually give them a sense of pride. And that's how we work in the community.
It makes sense. And it's always nice when your daughter's impressed by your work. I'll tell you the what.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
What kind of world do you envision a few years from now, when there are more menstrual hubs in Philly or in other cities, when menstruation is not a dirty word anymore?
Yeah, the world is just to really, you know, I think overall we live in a misogynistic patriarchal society that if it doesn't pertain to maleness, then it's, you know, basically swept under the rug. And I think that the most horrifying or horrific thing is to act like this isn't something that needs to be addressed. This is a normal, natural part of life. We have 9-year-old girls calling us because they can't do anything. And to me, that's just horrifying. That's, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me. So I think it will be a world to realize that no one would be here if we didn't have menstrual cycles overall. Let's just think that's where we all come from. You know, and it's funny, I always laugh, you know, I don't know if this is too graphic, the blood that we cheer over when a baby is born and is covered, you know, or the blood that we mourn over if we lose a child is the same blood as part of this menstrual cycle. And I just don't understand how it's so disgusting in one part and then so celebrated in another. So I think if we would just say that, I think people will understand this is just something we just need to talk about. And I think it starts with menstruating individuals really being more open about it. And I think once we stop it, it's almost like in anything else, you know, like once we start saying, hey, this makes, like with breastfeeding and all that, we start to, okay, let's talk about it. Let's do it. And I think that's what it is. And then everybody else will take hold and say, okay, this makes sense.
Thank you for that. Lynette, thank you so much for talking to us today. How can people learn more about this program?
Definitely. You can always follow me on my IG, no_moresecrets469, or visit our website, nomoresecretsnds.org.
And from the WRGULP interview series, Neighborly Chats, David Juro interviews Jessica Wrights and Nick Freeman, owners and operators of Mount Airy Groceries, about running a nonprofit and combating food insecurity.
You're listening to Neighborly Chats on WRGU 92.9 FM. Today I'm chatting with Jessica Wrights and Nicholas Freeman from Mount Airy Groceries. Mount Airy Groceries is a local fresh produce shop, as well as a food bank for those who are suffering from food insecurity. It was founded at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020.
We started out as a very simple concept that we just wanted to help people in our community to get fresh produce and groceries that couldn't get them because of COVID. We really created our operation as a result of COVID. People didn't want to go to the grocery store or, you know, Instacart and all these places that were suddenly there, you know, the need quadrupled overnight, that were totally overwhelmed and people had to wait 3 weeks to get groceries. So we just started buying food in bulk and kind of dividing it up into like these like mixed produce boxes and selling them to our neighbors. And so many people wanted that service that we quickly realized that we could make a profit. And then we decided to just start using that money that we're generating to donate boxes to Philadelphia Interfaith Hospitality Network, which is a great local charity. Now we focus on a lot more on working with larger nonprofits, some of the local public and charter schools, and they buy boxes, mixed produce boxes from us in bulk, like 50, 60, 70, 80 at a time. And then we, with our fleet of volunteers, we deliver them right to people's doors. It's all funded by the boxes that we sell and donations that we bring in from people that have believed in us and supported us over the past year.
Probably the most wonderful aspect of what we do is the coordination of efforts of all of the different nonprofits and all of the different groups of people that we meet. We have a gentleman that volunteers for us that he just distributes food right from his house. Out of the goodness of his heart, he travels to a variety of different locations and gives food out on the street or in different locations. So we work with gentlemen like him that do it on a private level all the way up to really large multi-million dollar nonprofits that we've partnered with.
The largest venue for Mount Airy Grocery to combat food insecurity is public schools.
I would say the vast majority of the work that we do is we help to assist schools who have dedicated funding and grants to address food insecurity. We help to just assist them basically with purchasing and distribution for their families. And one of the really nice ways that we've structured our program is that the food is essentially at cost and lower than most wholesale rates, but we still are able to factor in enough profit so that we can continue to feed more and more families. So as our operation grows, you know, we're now distributing in the thousands monthly. You know, sometimes we've distributed 400 or 500 boxes just in 1 week. Occasionally there's interruption in funding for federal programs, and then we'll get really busy. And people are really grateful to have local organizations such as ours. There's no red tape. Nick and I do not qualify our recipients. There's no form you have to fill out. There's no qualifications. If you knock on our door and you say that you're hungry and you need food, if we have it, we give it. You know, we have a lot of regular customers that need donations that will just walk in that we help. And then we assist with these larger organizations to feed their populations as well.
While supporting their community by running the nonprofit, Jess and Nick also had to support themselves.
Yeah, we've been running it essentially as a business, although it's a nonprofit, but our model is a business model because we haven't actually received a single grant yet.
We're so bogged down in the day-to-day of running the operation, and in the middle of that, I got a part-time job so that I could, you know, help us bring in money for ourselves.
We were working 80-hour work weeks just to get the food out, and I couldn't keep up with all the contacts. The administrative aspect of it was overwhelming.
Jess does 95%, 99% of the administrative stuff. And on any given week, I'm often just here to lift the heavy cases and then go off to my other job. The one thing I did try to take was I was like, all right, I'll manage the Instagram account. I'm getting a little bit better at it, so.
Neither Nick nor Jessica has any formal training or education in operating a nonprofit. I asked them what some of their biggest challenges were in operating this business for the first time.
The sharing of information and resources is really amazing. It's almost like we had a crash course in civics. We're learning more about how the government works, about what it means to be a community leader. We're learning about nonprofits. I feel almost like I'm getting like a master's class in free education. The hardest thing I had to learn was to let go and ask for help. I think in the beginning I felt almost guilty asking for help because you're asking for unpaid labor and resources and money from people. But one of my volunteers said to me, the more you ask for help and the more you allow your community to volunteer and assist you, you feed more people. And she really helped me mobilize an army of volunteers. It's incredible. We have a huge network of people that work for us now. We probably have, I say work, they're volunteers, but volunteer work. We have at least 50 volunteers packing our produce, picking up our produce, delivering our produce. We have people that are assisting us with repairs on the store. We have people helping us with administrative work. So the biggest hurdle for us really was just building like a business model and learning how to become the boss. That's pretty hard. I've never been a manager or a director before, so.
Before moving into their current brick-and-mortar location on Germantown Ave, Jess and Nick actually started the business from their home. They also talked about the assistance they received from neighboring businesses.
It's really, really been incredible how many people have helped us.
Really remarkable. We're coming up on our one-year anniversary, April 8th. That's the first day that we distributed. George Drakopoulos was instrumental in assisting us in getting our operation going.
He's a friend of ours, and he's one of the people that was helping us do the shopping when we first started. We were working out of the back room of Melolani Cafe, which is right down the street, right on Germantown Avenue.
We were originally handing out food from our house, from our front porch.
He would go to the food wholesaler and go to Restaurant Depot and buy cases in like 50-pound bags of carrots and all this stuff and haul it up to our porch, and we would divide it up there on our porch, and then I would go deliver it out to all, you know, maybe 30, 40 neighbors at a time. And then he said he couldn't have guests in his restaurant. I said, well, I have extra space there. Why don't you just do it there? So we did it there for a couple months, and then we
two
got
or three
space
months,
here.
Yeah,
so
our community is incredibly generous. It's unbelievable the amount of support we've had.
In fact, the building that we're sitting in right now is a donated storefront from the Mount Airy CDC. They're also a nonprofit, and it's part of their mission that they want to improve the community. And they, you know, saw what we're doing. They believed in us. We don't pay rent right now. Eventually, if we're going to stay here permanently, eventually we're going to
have to
pay something. We're figuring that out with them right now. But the next step for us is we're working with someone who is a grant writer. Like, we never got to it, and then we realized that there's people that's what they do, is they write grants for nonprofits. If we can get some larger funding it will go towards being able to pay rent and you know, have a lease and like stability.
I asked them if there are any particularly memorable individuals that they've interacted with over their time running this nonprofit.
Probably the most interesting person we've met, though, for me, is actually somebody that comes on a weekly basis for donations. And when we first met her, I don't think she trusted us. You know, she was a little bit grumpy and she kind of, she had her back up a little bit, you know, and she taught me a really good lesson. I thought, oh man, she really doesn't like us. I took it personally. And then over time, when she got to know us, she softened up a lot and she was extremely friendly now and she sees us every week. And it occurred to me how hard it must be for somebody to have to come up and ask for assistance. Sometimes the people that are serving people that need help, sometimes they run out of patience. It's hard. People get empathy fatigue and, you know, so I think of her a lot when I get frustrated, tired, things don't seem to be going well. I try to remember our mission and why we're doing what we're doing. And it helps to keep me centered when, you know, at the end of a long day, sometimes it seems like hard work, but every time we see her come every week, man, she sets our whole week straight again, and I'm so happy to see her and brings our mission, you know, down to like a very personal level. Gives us a reason to get up every day.
My final question for Nick and Jess was what kind of impact they wanted to have long-term on their community at large.
The most important goal that I have is teaching people what we do so that it can be reproduced. My ultimate goal would be where I'm not needed. I'd like to put a plan or program in place that you can kind of like cookie cutter, reproduce it in almost any neighborhood. I believe very strongly that people that volunteer and provide services should live and work in the neighborhoods that they're doing their work in, because food security, poverty, all sorts of oppressions that people deal with, they're different from neighborhood to neighborhood and county to county. So I think it's really important that people that are doing kind of like service work and charity work understand the population that they're working with. But the program itself and the actual economics of it and the business plan of it, I think, is easily reproducible in almost any neighborhood or community.
If you're looking to visit or get in touch with Mount Airy Groceries,
we are open to the public Tuesday through Friday. The number on the sign is actually my personal cell phone number. So if you come by and it looks like we're closed, we're probably delivering. We're still a little mom and pop operation. So feel free to text me or call me. Just because the door is locked doesn't mean I'm not right around the corner. You can also go on our website, mountairygroceries.com, to learn more about what we do. Now that the warmer season is coming, we'll be doing a lot more giveaways on the weekends, events that are COVID safe. So we're hoping on Saturdays to open up more free produce or discounted produce giveaways and things like that.
Mount Airy Groceries is located at 6620 Germantown Ave. Once again, that website is mountairygroceries.com. Mount is spelled out MOUNT. This has been Neighborly Chats on WRGU 92.9 FM. My name's David Juro, and if you're a local business interested in being interviewed by the series, please email neighborlychats929@gmail.com. That's neighborlychats929@gmail.com.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Marcelo Jauregui-Volpe, participant of the WPEB and Scrap Community News Reporting Workshop. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio project production.